I'm Lauren Davis, digital editor for health and education at WFYI, and this is part of an ongoing series of Twitter spaces that we provide to offer insight into some of the biggest issues across Indiana. Some good public health news came out last month. Alcohol, cigarette, and some drug use dropped to the lowest rates among young Hoosiers in 30 years, three decades. That was according to the 2022 Indiana Youth Survey, which asks Hoosiers in 6th through 12th grade about their substance use. That's good news because young people who misuse drugs are more likely to continue to struggle with substance use into adulthood. So was this an abnormal year or the start of a trend? To talk more about that, we have some great guests joining us. Darian Benson is a health reporter for Side Effects Public Media and WFYI, who has covered youth substance use in Indiana. Rochelle Gardner is the executive director of the Hope Academy Recovery High School in Indianapolis. And Sarah Platt is a recovery coach at Hope Academy. Thank you all so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
To start us off, Darian, let's set the stage just a little bit. Talk to us more about recent concerns when it comes to youth substance use trends.
Yeah, so prior to the pandemic, vaping was a huge cause of concern. You know, youth vaping was increasing. We started to see lung injuries associated with vaping and even deaths related to vaping. You know, health experts and advocates feared the increase in vaping was undoing years of work to reduce nicotine usage among youth. And Indiana ultimately raised the minimum smoking age from 18 to 21 to try and curb this trend in 2020.
And then this report comes out and it said substance use, including vaping, is down. So does that line up with national trends?
Yeah, so kind of. Flash forward to 2022 and, you know, the survey is conducted by IU. And it found that between 2020 and 2022, substance use among youth hit all-time lows in the 30 years the survey had been conducted. And it also saw a drop between 2020 and 2022. You know, more than 90,000 students across the state in grades 6 through 12 participated in the survey, and they were asked questions about their substance use in the past month. You know, these questions included, you know, alcohol usage, nicotine, marijuana, you know, among other substances. But it's important to note that in the survey, students were, you know, self-reporting their substance use habits. But a national survey was also conducted. It's conducted every year. It's called Monitoring the Youth. And it also saw a drop between 2020 and 2021. It saw, you know, like similar data drops and with nicotine usage and marijuana and alcohol. So it kind of lines up, but also it's important to note that opioid overdoses have increased over the past several years. Data from UCLA saw that between 2019 and 2020, fatal overdoses among teens increased by 94%, which is a big difference, especially concerning because the opioid crisis continues, especially with, you know, fentanyl being a big cause of concern right now. And one of the leaders of the national survey kind of questioned if students were being honest about their substance use habits.
Oh, that is interesting. And, you know, speaking of folks who are involved in these studies, you spoke with the researcher who led that IU study, the one that's focused on Indiana. And what were her early guesses as to why this could be happening? I feel like 2020 was a year where a lot of things happened that maybe could lead to this.
Yeah, so she did point to the pandemic as a possible reason that, you know, we're seeing decreases in Indiana and nationally. But she said, you know, it might be too early to tell if this is a trend or a fluke until, you know, future surveys are conducted. But, you know, she cited the pandemic as being a possible reason for a few reasons. One, you know, there was still e-learning going on, so kids weren't at school or, you know, other activities where they can socialize with other kids and, you know, maybe be exposed to substances. Also, with e-learning, more parents are working from home, so kids, you know, might not be home alone as often.
Awesome. Darian, thank you for explaining that to us. I want to turn to Rochelle Gardner. You're the executive director of Hope Academy Recovery High School in Indianapolis, like I said earlier. Rochelle, tell us more about Hope Academy for folks who don't know and what its role is in the community.
Sure. So thanks, Lauren, for having us. And Hope Academy is a charter high school that focuses on students who are struggling with substance use disorder. And so that's a whole range of young people from, maybe just experimenting with using that's caused some consequences at home and school, all the way to students who, classified as having abuse diagnosis or even the diagnosis of addiction. And so we're a 9th through 12th grade high school. We focus on two platforms. We have a recovery focus. Recovery coaches then teach the young people all of the life skills needed to make changes in their life, from avoiding drugs and alcohol, but also social, emotional, and physical health as well. So, when you're making changes about your drug and alcohol use, a lot of other factors come into play. And so the recovery team is there to then kind of help fill in the gaps and replace some of the mechanisms that they've been using drugs and alcohol to avoid and give them new tools. On the academic side, it's a traditional high school. So it's a Core 40 diploma that we're focused on. So it's all teacher led with teachers in the classroom. The difference with our school is we're a small school, so our capacity is about 65 kids. So you can imagine an algebra class with only 10 kids in it versus an algebra class with 25 or 30 kids in it. Somebody that also has been using and their brain's been impacted, their learning has been impacted because of their drug use. So a smaller environment is really more impactful to helping them feel successful in the classroom. Once they start feeling successful in the classroom, then they start feeling successful in the other changes that they're making. So we've been around 16 years. We're currently located on the south side of the city, close to the University of Indianapolis. This is our third year in that location. We take students from all over really the 9-county area. We have kids ride a bus for an hour to get to school every day.
Wow. But it sounds like the experience is really tailored toward them. And that's great. And like you said, it's been around for more than a decade and you've been doing this work a long time. So, hearing about what Darian was saying and some of these news stories that have come out about these reports that say, we have this good news that youth substance use is decreasing. Is that surprising or is that different from your on the ground experience in Indy?
Well, as you said, I've been working with kids with substance use disorder for about 30 years. And the pandemic certainly has played a key role in what we're dealing with right now. So I kind of agree that it's too early to say if this is a trend or if it is true. What I can tell you is that the people in my world that I'm talking to, and that's, treatment providers and principals and private therapists and, Department of Child Service workers and things like that, the mental health and substance use disorders are just skyrocketing. I can tell you that this year we have more young men that are coming to us telling us how anxious they are and using substances to help with that anxiety is just increasing. And so, I hope that this is a trend going downward, but I do think that it's, time will tell. The other component is the e-learning component is true. I mean, and when they took the survey, they were e-learning. A lot of the kids that struggle with substance use disorder don't show up to school. What we're finding is because of that e-learning experience, there was a huge gap in some of their education experiences, and they're having to make that up because of the pandemic and just their drug and alcohol use.
And I want to hear from Sarah Platt, too, who's a recovery coach at Hope Academy and actually also a former student. Sarah, can you tell us more about your experience at Hope and what brought you there?
Hi. Yeah, of course. So I came to Hope my junior year of high school. I started there. My high school experience slowly kind of from my freshman year to my sophomore year, I was getting more and more into drugs. So using substances, and I didn't really realize it was a problem until the end of my sophomore year. And my parents and I kind of had to take a look at my life and the choices I was making and make some pretty serious decisions about what I wanted to do and who I wanted to be. And I knew that I didn't want to be the person that I was at that time. So we found Hope Academy. It was incredible. It was right around the corner from us. And I enrolled immediately. And I started, like I said, my junior year. And I got so much support. I mean, it was just like a whole world opened up about things I had no idea about. I got so much information about substance use. I got so much information on how to battle that. And I feel like I just joined a whole community of people who were willing to help and knew how to do that.
Sarah, thank you for sharing that. I appreciate it. And so now you're a recovery coach. And so for those who aren't familiar, what is that job? What does your work look like these days?
Sure. So I work with the students one-on-one that we have at Hope Academy, and it's kind of just helping them navigate their recovery, helping them navigate this new life that they're trying to live. So we talk through things going on at home, things going on at school, sobriety, all different kinds of things. And we try to, you know, make plans that work with them and that can make them be the best that they want to be.
And this conversation, I think, is important right now because, Rochelle, I think when we talk about and even report on substance use, you know, the work that people like Darian and I do, we often do it from an adult perspective. So I hope you could talk a little bit more about what people who work in your field, people like you and Sarah, have to think about that's different when it comes to addressing young people's drug use and habits.
So, yeah, I'll speak first and then Sarah can talk after me. But I think, I think it's important to understand that our youth right now are living in a very fast, we're all living in a fast paced world. As adults, though, we have better coping skills to navigate that. Our young people, live for things to happen immediately, results immediately, wanting, instant gratification. And so when it comes to dealing with emotions or feelings or, anxiety, those kinds of pieces, they want something that's going to take it away instantly. And I was talking to a group of parents a couple of weeks ago talking about, the different drugs and substances and how they impact students. And what's really important to know is that, when our kids are this anxious and dealing with these kinds of emotions, they're just trying to not feel that emotion anymore. Okay. So they're not necessarily, it's not that they're choosing a drug, an alcohol over something else. It's just, they want to feel different. So they're going to use whatever it is. It could be a box of Benadryl. It could be six bottles of NyQuil. It could be marijuana. It could be anything like that. And so it's more, we're more focused on why do you have to feel different and feel, feel high or impaired to not have, to avoid whatever it is you're avoiding.
So when I was in high school and kind of navigating my world, my substance abuse disorder, it seemed like it was a lot more hidden. Because adults they drink and it seems socially acceptable and they're old enough where as a kid, it's kind of exciting at the beginning because it feels like you're being a grown up. And then the more you get into it, you feel really ashamed and you try to keep it hidden. And also you don't really have the access to drugs and alcohol like adults do. You're kind of left to take extreme measures to be able to, like Rochelle said, avoid or get high or numb things out. So I think that's why we see kids turn to Benadryl or whatever it is that might seem really odd to us or really extreme to us, but really they are just trying to compensate for not having the access to drugs like they want.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think NyQuil chicken challenge was something I would have to Google as I was looking into this space. But, while we're seeing reports that maybe students are self-reporting substance use going down, there's also social media and TikTok and trends like that to work with. I mean, when it comes to actually talking to kids about things, though, like this, Sarah, as someone who's been in their shoes, how do adults and parents and teachers and trusted figures talk to young people about drug use in a way that's actually helpful?
I think one of the big things that gets in the way of adults and parents and their children having like a healthy conversation about their substance use is that teenagers always think that their parents don't understand them. And trying to get down on the same level as your teen or whoever it is that you're talking to and try to really see things from their perspective, I feel like can just change the conversation altogether. Because really, I think they just want to be seen and they want to be able to be heard and they want someone that can support them. So just going into whatever the conversation is without judgment, with love, letting them know that you're there to help them and not to make them feel ashamed can really change the trajectory of a conversation.
And I think what's difficult about that as adults, we kind of perpetuate that stigma of shame, because as a parent, I certainly would feel bad if my child has a substance use disorder, right? Because that means I might be a bad parent. Instead of really understanding what is going on and how substances are really a part of our community and how our children are navigated towards that, really understanding that and coming to them from a place of where Sarah is talking about love, we come to them in fear because we're afraid, right? Even school leaders are afraid of what's going to happen. And we talk a lot about the opiate overdoses and the opiate deaths. And those are horrible. But what leads up to it, it's not just opiates. They just don't start with opiates. There's a whole pathway that leads up to that, that we can intercede and make some changes with, but we have to be open and willing to hear the fact that there is a problem, and we have to know the real facts. Kids just want you to be real. You know, they don't silo their emotions or their problems. They just kind of dump it on the table, and you've got to be willing to kind of work through all of it, or they're going to move on to the next person and they're going to believe their friends over anybody else.
Rochelle, to touch on that more, and Darian had brought this up earlier in the conversation, you know, while we're talking about some reports saying that teen substance use is going down, there was a study from JAMA this spring that found overdose deaths among teens in the U.S. rose in 2020 and continued to rise in 2021. And reporting from NPR showed that that rise isn't because more teens are using opioids, but because of fentanyl. And I wondered, is there an effect of fentanyl in Indiana when it comes to young people's drug use right now?
Well, I mean, yes, we're having more conversations around fentanyl and, you know, teaching our kids more about fentanyl and, you know, the importance of maybe testing a substance if they're going to use it. But, you know, it's coming in the marijuana that they're using. It's not just pills or opiates. It's coming in almost methamphetamine. Everything that they're using, they really need to be testing for fentanyl. as it comes across, you know, from wherever it's coming, the fentanyl is getting injected into everything. And we do need to be afraid of that. Now, they do take pause for a minute. But as we were having a conversation yesterday, a student who is wanting to get high is not going to take the time necessarily to test their drug because they just really want to be high. And so it's going to take a lot of conversation around the importance of making sure what you have is pure or real before you just put it in your body.
And we actually have some questions I want to pose to our panelists from the Indianapolis Mayor's Youth Leadership Council. We appreciate them sending some questions to us. And we've addressed this a little bit, but ask more directly, do you think parents have a role in drug use among youth? You know, how do they directly or indirectly promote or discourage it?
Well, I will say that because I've been in the business for a long time, I'm seeing more and more second and third generation substance use happening in families. The other part of that, what I would say is that, you know, I think the stigma around dealing with that and being open about that and getting help for that is also keeping the family system sick. And so being more open and honest and learning really the true facts, I think is important. And the other thing I tell parents is that, you know, they have a responsibility. Now that they know, they have a responsibility to continue to educate themselves, which is why parent programming and why we offer a parent support group, those kinds of pieces are key to the changes that they need to make and the changes that their student is going to make and be successful.
Yeah, Sarah, anything to add?
So in my experience, when my parents first found out that we were dealing with substance abuse, I think, like Rochelle said earlier, they were really, really terrified. And I think the best thing that they did for me and for themselves was get educated. I mean, they read books, they went to Al-Anon meetings, they did everything that they could to make sure that they were up to date on the most relevant information and how they could help me the best. And it made them so much more helpful in supporting me on my journey because I think they understood better, and it probably helped curb a little bit of the fear.
Another question from the Indianapolis Mayor's Youth Leadership Council. You know, what has made the conditions like this right now, where maybe substance use is going down, but also there's the perspective of, you know, kids wanting to be altered, like we've talked about, or wanting instant gratification? Are there other factors like the environment or social media or living conditions that contribute to youth substance use?
Yeah, like I said, I have a freshman in college, and she's not any different than the teens I see. That there's a lot of stress that our students are under. Okay. And that is both community based. That's, you know, what the expectations are educationally based. That's what they see on social media that they need to live up to. That's the fast paced world that they live in. And they feel like they have to perform at light speed. And so that is creating a lot of mental health issues that then ultimately, you know, are being dealt with through drug and alcohol use. And so I think we have to recognize that. And I think we have to stand back and say, what is the real cause, and what can we do as a community to help slow the world down for them?
And to kind of piggyback off what Rochelle said, I think social media plays such a huge part because they are able to look at things from all around the world. And there's no better way to feel insecure than when you're looking at what everyone else is doing while you have to be cooped up in the house for whatever reason. But I think another big part of it is the legalization of marijuana around the country has made it seem so much more acceptable, where before it might have seemed not like something everybody did. You've heard of people that have done it, but you don't really know anybody personally. Where now it feels like everybody does it. It's kind of like alcohol, where it's so much more accepted.
I think both of you, Rochelle and Sarah, sort of have teed up to my next question, which is, you know, where does mental health fit into this? I think, you know, we're seeing after young people have spent two full pandemic school years away and are now returning and things are looking back to normal. You know, we've seen reporting from our education team about both teachers and students maybe being a little bit happier. But that doesn't detract from, you know, two really difficult years. And like you said, just how difficult it is to be a young person right now. Yeah. So where does mental health fit into this conversation?
Well, so, you know, I think that we have to, like I said, young people don't silo their mental health or their substance abuse, okay? When they talk about how they're feeling, they're talking about all of that. And if we as adults aren't willing to also address anxiety and marijuana use or drug use, then we're doing them a disservice. We have to ask the questions. And so what I'm hoping is that, you know, there's a lot of conversations that the pandemic has caused a lot of, you know, mental health issues. That is true, but it's also caused a lot of substance abuse issues on the back end. And I don't want that to get, you know, re-stigmatized any more than it already is, because that is how our kids are coping. And as Sarah said, you know, now that we've normalized marijuana and the perception of the risks of marijuana have decreased tremendously, that is not a good thing. It's not harmful to me. And it is, you know, we're talking about brain development. We're talking about social emotional development. We're talking about how, you know, development of how to deal with their mental health. As long as they're using substances, that is not going to help.
I know a lot of this conversation has focused on, you know, what young people are struggling with right now when it comes to substance use, but I wanted to end the conversation and ask, I'm sure you do a fair bit of celebrating with your students too. And So Rochelle and Sarah, what are some of the good things going on in their lives right now?
That is my favorite part of my job, is getting to celebrate with the kids, because they work so hard to make positive changes and to work with their families and get their relationships back to where they were. So at Hope, we celebrate sobriety time. It's kind of a whole school thing. The kid gets to get up and announce their sobriety time and everyone cheers. We have little prizes for each period of sobriety time. And then we also have opportunities to share milestones or things that they're celebrating that aren't sobriety related. So that they got their license or they passed a class they've been working really hard on. And I feel like it ties the community so much tighter together, where we get to celebrate our wins.
Well, and the more we celebrate their small successes, the bigger successes will come. So, you know, it's a B in math on a math test. I sat with a young lady who, you know, didn't want to really engage with the rest of the community. And we were having lunch, and she had a paper there, and it was a math quiz, and she got a B on it. And she goes, you know, this is my first B ever in math. And I'm like, that is so awesome. And I brought some other kids over and we talked about that. And, you know, it's those kinds of things, because they feel so shamed and defeated because of whatever has happened in their life. You know, their drug use has caused all kinds of trauma. But celebrating the small successes are key